Welcome, everyone. This is Kevin Gianni from Renegade Health, and today we have a very special interview. This is in regards to kind of the great health debate, so we wanted to put it out to you as soon as we can. And the reason why is because a friend of mine contacted me, and he is a well-known author and researcher in the natural health world, and he contacted me and said, "Hey, Kevin, I have some things that I want to share that you know may provide some insight into the whole debate and how it's structured and all the things that you've talked about and how they can be applied in real life." And I said, "Well, of course. I mean, I want to jump on this as quickly as possible." So we've arranged to have him on the call here. And so today I'm talking with David Reinoshek. David Reinoshek holds a master's degree in vegan and live food nutrition from Dr. Gabriel Cousins in the Tree of Life Rejuvenation Center. He served as a research assistant to Dr. Cousins on There Is a Cure for Diabetes, and he's also taught the academic portions of the kitchen and gardening apprenticeships at the Tree of Life. David's been a member of the International Living Food Summit, authored 3 chapters of Raw Food Works by the members of the International Living Food Summit. David also credits juice feasting and raw live foods with healing his many years of acid reflux disease and related health challenges. In the past 2 years, he has moved into a post-raw vegan or integrated nutritional perspective and practice, which we'll talk about today. David is also the creator, and this is probably where you know him from, of the 92-day program on juicefeasting.com. David lives with his wife, Katrina, and their 20-month-old daughter, Sophia, in Victoria, British Columbia, Canada. David, welcome.
Thank you very much, Kevin. I'm so glad to be here with you. I really appreciate your work. This will be the 3rd time that we've done an interview together, and I always enjoy our conversations.
I do too. I enjoy the ones that we don't have, in interview format as well. And that's what we wanted to do today, was bring everyone some of these conversations so maybe they can gain some insight. So why don't we start, if you want, just tell us a little about what you've been doing, and then we'll get into some of the questions that I want to ask you.
Yes. So I worked with Dr. Cousins for several years at the Tree of Life, as you just said. And we did write There's a Cure for Diabetes, which is an excellent book on a raw vegan approach to healing diabetes. And Katrina and I finished up our work in Arizona, and we moved up here to Canada. And I wrote several chapters for Raw Food Works. And I've been reading Ken Wilber's work for a while. We'll get into Ken Wilber in a few minutes. But I was starting to recognize, even prior to moving up here, that there has to be some kind of a developmental perspective that we can apply to nutrition. And it doesn't seem like it's just random. We kind of eat this diet, and we eat that diet, and we eat that diet, and we eat this. It's got to be some kind of a developmental perspective that we can apply to it that's useful. We moved up here, and it was cold. I've been eating raw vegan for over 5 years. I do credit it with healing some major health challenges that I had. And I got really cold. It was sunless. It was damp. And I was still eating raw vegan, and I could not figure out how to get warm. And long story short, it took me about 1.5 years to come around to changing my diet over to more cooked foods and also incorporating some animal products into my diet, and I started to warm up. So we're going to talk about that today because I went through a dark night of the soul. Having been full on in the raw vegan movement, having healed from it, having worked right at the epicenter of it with Dr. Cousins and also the International Living Food Summit, having done the writing for several books on it, I based my whole career on it, and also many of the good things that we talk about with regards to raw vegan in terms of helping heal the planet and heal human beings, et cetera, to incorporate animal products and cooked foods really created for me a dark night of the soul. I went through a period of thinking, you know what, I just don't know anything about nutrition anymore. I'm absolutely confused. I can't teach. I can't teach. I don't even know. And usually when you go through a dark night of the soul, you've just got to keep on going. And coming out the other side, I have what I feel is a very helpful, developmental, and integral, again, we'll get to that word in a few minutes, but an integral perspective on nutrition that can make sense of the journey that we've all been on in the Western world with regards to nutrition and our own health. So I'm writing The Spectrum of Diet. I'm coaching. I'll be starting up another group juice feast here in just 2 days. and I coach about 12 to 14 people at a time, half an hour a day, 5 days a week. It's a lot of fun, and it's so juice feasting's become a crucible for talking about a lot of other things in a person's life that are of utmost importance, the big topics of a person's life. What is nutrition? What is good health in service to? You know, that's kind of what we end up getting to. So that's the work that I've been doing. And I was really excited when you started to talk about the great health debate and that was coming on and looking at the speakers. And so that's why I gave you a call and why we're doing this now, because I felt that the perspective that I've been developing over the last few years really helped to draw the great health debate together.
Well, great. So let's get into that. And I do want to kind of put a question in the queue for you, just so we're reminded that it will come up again. But, you know, some people out there might say, well, you know, just because you were cold doesn't mean you need to switch to animal products. So I want to kind of put that out there as a thing that we will discuss. And then, but let's move through the questionings and eventually we'll get to that particular part of the discussion. So first off, you know, what were your thoughts on the Great Health Debate when you called me? You were very excited about it. Tell me a little bit about, you know, what you were thinking in regards to that type of event and how it was all organized.
Well, you're trying to do something that is both admirable and really difficult, which is to ask for the professional and the professional opinion over many years of many different people. And they have their reasons why they have their particular perspective on diet and nutrition and health. And it is difficult to integrate all of that. It's difficult to get people to debate their opinions. They have a perspective. And what I'd like to say about perspectives is they're usually true, but they're partial. So people tend to be right in what they affirm and sometimes wrong in what they deny. And so with a conversation like the one that you established, you get a whole lot of perspectives. And when you listen to a speaker, a lot of it sounds quite, you're like, that sounds good. And then you listen to somebody else, like, well, that sounds good too, but don't seem to quite match up. And so you get what we call a plurality, meaning a whole lot of different perspectives. And they're all like, they're like playing cards that you've thrown out on a glass table. Put in your mind a glass table and you've just taken cards and you've thrown them out there. And no one card is really held up higher than another except by the person who tends to own that playing card. And they'll pick it up off the table and they'll say, well, this is why I think my view is probably the best. And then they'll put it down and then somebody else will do the same thing. And so you get what in the integral community, again, I'll qualify that word in a second, but in the integral community we call it a flatland. It's just a bunch of views that are just put out there and no one view is any better than another. And you're kind of left there thinking, well, how do I navigate this? You know, what kind of a map can I create or a way of kind of discerning where the truth lies and where it's appropriate for me? So one of the things that I liked out of the health debate and what you've started to do afterwards is create what we'd call orienting generalizations. So a generalization such as you should be eating more plants or local food would be better or stop eating processed foods or exercise is important. Or cleansing or fasting are important. These are orienting generalizations, meaning if we back up far enough, if we kind of take the 50,000-foot view, we can start to see that everybody agrees upon these things, and that can help to start orient us to a particular viewpoint. So I really applaud you on doing the Great Health Debate because the viewpoints are very solid for a lot of people. We've created... You know, and I put myself in that camp too. We really create edifices, and it can be hard to let those go.
Well, of course. Well, let's talk a little about Ken Wilber and get this, you know, get down the integrative approach so people understand what you're talking about as we move forward.
Right. So Ken Wilber is an American philosopher, was doing a PhD in biology back in the early 70s, got interested in Eastern and Western philosophy and a combination of the two, also Eastern and Western psychology. Ken has a PhD level of understanding in about 12 different disciplines. He's been meditating for about 35 different years. He has conversations, very deep conversations with people who have more of a mystical understanding about religious traditions or spirituality and every major world religious tradition. He's created something called the Integral Institute, which is in Colorado. And Ken's approach all these years, Ken's put out over 20 books, amazing, which I'll read you just a little bit about Ken because I think this really speaks to the entire conversation we're about to have today. I've been studying Ken now for over 3 years, almost 4 years. Ken's approach is this. Nobody is smart enough to be 100% wrong all the time. So everybody's partially correct. So how can we figure out where people are partially correct and take all of those partial truths and then orchestrate them into an overall model of reality as we know it? So just a little bit about Ken, because this really does speak to the rest of the conversation. Wilbur's approach is the opposite of being eclectic. He's provided a coherent and consistent vision that seamlessly weaves together truth claims from fields such as physics and biology, the eco sciences, chaos theory and system sciences, medicine, biochemistry, art, poetry, and aesthetics, psychology from Freud to Jung to Piaget, some of these names you might recognize, some you may not, philosophers such as Plato and Plotinus, to Shankara and Nagarjuna in the East, from Descartes to Locke to Kant. These are philosophers that are held up to be some of the greatest minds in Eastern and Western philosophy. All of this is just a sampling. Is it any wonder, then, that those who focus narrowly on one particular field might take offense when that field's not presented as the linchpin of the cosmos? What Ken does is create an integral theory that takes the best truths from multiple perspectives and lines them up. And what I'm trying to do with nutrition is do the same thing, is create an integral theory of nutrition that's useful so that we can navigate the nutritional territory. And we're going to talk about it.
Sounds challenging.
It is challenging. But it's worth it. It's really worth it. But when you're starting to look at, how do I honor the truths from anthropology, from sociology, from psychology, spirituality and religion, from medicine, law, politics, economics, start to think, okay, how am I going to do this? No, what we get as a benefit from Ken is that he's actually done it. And you can read a nice little book. The book I suggest that everybody look at is called A Theory of Everything. And I'll read just a little bit out of A Theory of Everything today as we get further on in the conversation. But there are so many things.
How do you gather these truths without getting even more confused? How does the whole process go?
Right. So you're going to start to look at the things that everybody seems to agree on, and you move from there. So one of the things about Ken's thinking is looking at an evolutionary perspective. So I have begun to start talking about evolutionary developmental nutrition, or just an evolutionary perspective on nutrition, or integral evolutionary nutrition. And so the whole cosmos is in an evolutionary process. Here is a word to hold on to for the rest of the conversation today. The word holons. Now, what is a holon? A holon is anything, but a holon is something that is a whole in and of itself, but it's also part of something else. So you're a holon. You maintain your own integrity. You've got things that you're doing, like having this conversation right now, but you're also part of something larger. You're a part of the future. You're a part of a whole society. You're a part of the biosphere. You're a part. So you're both a whole and a part. The cosmos, the living cosmos, is made up of holons, atoms to molecules to cells and to organs and systems and whole bodies, or letters into words, into paragraphs, or an acorn eventually becomes an oak. These are holons that are becoming larger and larger as time goes on. So a whole on is something that's a whole in and of itself, but eventually becomes part of something larger than itself. We call this a holarchy or a hierarchy. Okay. Now, a lot of us, if we're into a plant-based diet and we're for peace, much more into egalitarianism, and we say, you know what, I don't even want to get into hierarchy anymore. I've seen what hierarchy has done to the environment, to minorities, to women, to animals. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I'm all for just egalitarianism. Everyone is equal. And there's a certain partial truth to that. But the cosmos is also made up of developmental hierarchies. And the ones that I just talked about are more on the more in the range of domination hierarchies. I'm higher on the ladder than you, and so I'm going to dominate you. But there's also developmental hierarchies. And so the movement of, let's say, atoms into molecules, into cells, into organs and systems and a whole body is a developmental hierarchy or a holarchy, a development of lower-level holons into higher-level holons. Now, how does this apply to nutrition? Well, why did we get into live foods? Now, Kevin, you and I ate live foods for a number of years. Why do we do it? Why do we not cook some of our food? Because we want to protect the integrity of the food that we eat, and we want to make sure that there's enough depth there to the food. And so if you start to cook or process a food, then you start to decrease the amount of organized holons that are in that food. And so instead of getting an organized structure, a holarchy, you just get a heap of stuff. And if we take an apple and we burn it enough, you'll just get a heap full of minerals, you know, and not much else. But we want all that organized. And so the way the cosmos develops is into higher and higher levels of being and knowing and capacities, what we call deep holons. So an atom isn't a very deep holon. It doesn't have a whole lot of capacity. But a human being or a cow definitely does. There's more depth there. So one of the things that Ken is looking at is developmental schemes like this. How does the cosmos develop, and why is that important? And where am I in terms of particular kinds of development, whether it's physical development or moral development, spiritual development, the development of one's particular worldview, which we're going to get into today, a society's economic development, or their ability to produce food. Some societies are not very developed in that, and others are quite highly developed in it. But we're always looking at these developmental processes. I'll mention just a few more just to kind of give you a feel of developmental processes that you're already aware of. A movement from being egocentric. I think of my daughter right now. She's just getting to know her own self. She can't really care about much of anybody else than herself. She can start to see, like, if I've got a cut on my hand, that maybe there's something wrong. But over the next few years, she'll move in from being egocentric into being more sociocentric. Who are these people around me? What is the society that I live in? The pets that are in the house, how do I care for them? So you start to move into more of a sociocentric level of care and concern. That's a developmental stage. Move from being egocentric into more sociocentric. Some people will move into being more world-centric. I don't just care about myself or my family or my friends or just the culture that lives around me, but I actually care about all cultures and all people. That's a wider embrace than just being egocentric or sociocentric. Now, a lot of us, like I said, in the plant-based movements are trying to be more world-centric. I'm taking into account how many people I affect by the diet that I eat, not just myself, but the rest of the world, too. Can move into being what we call cosmocentric. That's cosmos with a K, meaning the whole living cosmos. If you're cosmocentric, you're saying, I don't just care about all human beings, but I care about all species or all beings. Starts to sound spiritual when you get to that point. But this move from egocentric to sociocentric to worldcentric and to cosmocentric is a developmental scheme that we all go through. And, of course, you're welcome to stop at any point along the way. Some people decide to stop at sociocentric and they think my country is the best, my particular diet is the best, my religious tradition is the best, and I don't care about anybody else's, and that's it. But in the world that we live in now, with so many different cultures and viewpoints, so much interaction worldwide, we're really called to move into a higher and wider and deeper perspective, into more world-centric or cosmocentric. And I think most of us who are probably listening to this conversation right now are saying, yes, that's what I want. I want a higher, wider, deeper embrace. I'd like to understand how the cosmos develops and be able to honor that and help that develop out in the world and also in myself. I want more depth, to myself. I want more depth in the world, and I want it more available to more people. So these are some developmental schemes. Now, there's one more, and I put it on our notes for this conversation. A developmental scheme that goes through every major world religious tradition or philosophy. And it's called the Great Chain of Being. Kevin, have you heard of the Great Chain of Being? Is that like a term that you've heard thrown around?
No, only from you.
Okay. So the Great Chain of Being, again, if you look at any, if anybody's read Houston Smith, for example, who wrote The World's Religions, he'll talk about the Great Chain of Being. Aldous Huxley wrote a book called The Perennial Philosophy. That's another word for the Great Chain of Being. So without going on about that, let me just tell you what it is. The Great Chain of Being is a hierarchical developmental perspective on the entire cosmos. This move from matter to simple matter, strings or atoms, but stuff that doesn't really have quite a life of its own yet. It's not biological yet. Just simple matter. Matter gives rise to the possibility for biology or a body. So matter into body. A body gives rise to the possibility for something that's even beyond just a body itself, which is a mind, an awareness. One's mind gives rise to the possibility for the awareness of one's own soul. And if you talk to mystics or people who are deeply religious, they'll tell you that your own soul is really pointing to the ground of your whole being or where the whole thing started, which is spirit itself. So this move from matter into body, into mind, into soul, into spirit are actually levels of your being. This is a developmental holarchy that we see worldwide throughout all time. People have been recognizing this. Now, why is this important for nutrition? I mean, am I getting into a spiritual conversation here, or are we going to talk about food, right? So this phrase that's been thrown around a whole lot by somebody that I respect greatly, and we're going to refer back to him in a little bit, David Wolfe. David Wolfe has been saying for years, he'll say, the most important truth is you are what you eat. And it is a perennial truth. You'll see it all over the world, just as he says. But where does that truth fit in a larger scheme of who we are? Because some of us have been starting to think, I'm a little bit more than just what I eat. So if you take the perennial philosophy or the Great Chain of Being, this movement from matter into body, into mind, into soul, into spirit, or this movement from physics into biology, into more psychology, and then into theology, and then into mysticism. If you take this movement and you take the phrase, you are what you eat, it's going to apply most strongly at one particular point along this developmental hierarchy. And where it fits is with your body. So if we take I am statements or you are statements up through the perennial philosophy, we can start to take this very important statement and identify where it's partial and where it may be lacking a little bit. So if you take just the level of matter, the most true statement at that level, that kind of low, that not very deep level of the cosmos or your own being is you are what you have. Okay? So I'm made up of atoms or molecules. I mean, I actually exist. I am matter. And so at that level, it's just you are what you have. At the level of body or biology, the big truth statement for human beings is you are what you eat. It's more true there than any place else. As you move to the level of mind, you are what you eat still will have an impact, but not nearly as much as the statement you are what you think or how you think. With my thoughts, I create the world. That's a much more true statement at the level of mind than it is at the level of body. Okay. So that I am statement, I am what I think, or with my thoughts, I create the world. At the level of soul, your own soul, what's really dear to you, the I am statement is you are who or how you love or how you offer love and compassion in the world. That's the most true thing you could say about the level of soul. Now, the last part of the perennial philosophy or the Great Chain of Being is spirit. That's going to sound mystical because it is. It's a mystic orientation that says this kind of thing. But if you read the mystics, whether they're Christian mystics or Jewish mystics or Hindu mystics or Buddhist mystics or Taoist mystics, they'll all say the same thing at the level of spirit. And the phrase is basically, I am that I am, or I amness. Unity. One with the all. Now, you talk to someone like Gabriel Cousins, he'll talk with you that way because Gabriel is a mystic. Okay? And a lot of people who are getting into more plant-based nutrition and turning from just their kind of more socio or ethnocentric religion into more of a world-centric perspective on spirituality or mysticism will start to speak this way. Okay? But there really is a unity of mind on this worldwide when you start to get into the mystical level of religious traditions. So your food, what you eat, is in service to the higher levels of your being. Okay? So there is what we'd call an upward causation, meaning that the lower levels of your being do have some impact on the higher levels of your being. There's also a downward causation. Your mind can affect your body. Your mind can also operate on matter. I can take a rock and, you know, throw it across a field. Okay? So it works both ways. Where we get into trouble in the nutritional field or in the realm of religion and spirituality is thinking that the final truth is held at any one of these particular levels. It's not. It's levels of truth. And you'll hear me say that over and over again today as we talk. It's not, here's the final truth. If you're looking for that, then you're going to be missing out on some really important aspects of the cosmos, whether we're speaking religiously or politically or economically or nutritionally speaking. If you think you've finally found the final truth, this is the way to eat, you're missing something. And that's what I'm going to be illustrating today. So there are all these different levels of truth to your being, from what you have to what you eat to what you think to how you love and offer compassion to a direct recognition, if you're a mystic and do enough meditation, the fact that the ground of your being actually is spirit itself. Okay? So
let me ask you this. Why is nutrition as so hotly debated as, say, religion? I mean, there's something, you know, I think you're kind of alluding to it and you're talking here, but let's like talk about it like head on. Like, why are these two, mm-hmm. you know, why are people as passionate about both of them almost similarly?
When you get into nutrition, at least at the levels that a lot of us have been speaking at in the vegetarian, vegan, and particularly the raw vegan community, which is like full on, there is what is going on is a expansion of the amount of perspectives that you can take. So instead of just eating a standard American diet, and we'll get into the spectrum of diet in a minute, but instead of just saying, well, I just eat whatever tastes good to me or what the people around me eat, say, well, there's more here to take into consideration. And so part of spiritual development is taking on higher, wider, deeper perspectives, meaning caring for more people than yourself or more beings than just yourself. Also in spirituality, I think there is a reconnection with aspects of ourselves that we have cast off. So if you look at the perennial philosophy, for example, if you view matter to body to mind to soul to spirit as concentric circles that build on each other, we tend to kind of go out. If you put matter at the beginning and then draw another circle outside of that that's body and another circle outside of that that's mind and then soul and then finally on the very outside is spirit, we tend to kind of move as human beings out to the level of mind, particularly in Western society. We love thinking, love surfing the net and thinking about things. And we tend to, and I make this mistake too, we tend to dissociate from our body. And you do that long enough and your body starts to get pretty unhappy. And I think in the raw vegan movement in particular, I mean, I can really speak from that since I've been so strongly aligned with the raw vegan movement, we tend to get reacquainted with our body. It's called the curative spiral. We kind of go out from this outer level back toward the center, and then we spiral back out through the perennial philosophy. So we kind of go from mind, we recapture matter, which is food, and body, which is healing our own body, and then we start to make the move outward from matter to body to mind to soul to spirit. So there's this recapturing or re-honoring of these lower levels of our existence, so to speak. And I think that that is a spiritual practice to do that. I think it's high spiritual practice to acknowledge as much of oneself and as much of reality as possible. So this is also the definition of cognitive development. Cognitive development isn't just that I'm a genius at biology or happen to be a good engineer. Cognitive development is really based on how many perspectives can I hold. Can I see the world the way I do and also the way you do, or that another culture does, or that another nutritionist does? Can I take a scientific perspective? Can I take a anthropological or a sociological perspective on this? Can I take a spiritual perspective on this, or an emotional perspective? How many truths can I hold and integrate? That's cognitive development. And that's what's behind Ken Wilber and Integral Theory and what I've been working with for the last 3 or 4 years. And Kevin, you've been doing a lot of this yourself. I mean, a lot of what you're doing is what I would qualify as integral thinking. Just how can I take the partial truths out there that I'm finding as I talk with all these amazing people, and how can I find the orienting generalizations, and how can I structure all of this in a way that makes sense and it's useful?
Unbeknownst to me, without knowing the term behind it. Yes, that's exactly what Renegade Health is all about. Let's talk about the spectrum of diet and how it applies to what we've been talking about, and kind of to give us a framework of what your thoughts on nutrition are and how you've been able to organize it in a way that may help people understand a little bit more about what's going on.
You bet. So first of all, I want to qualify the whole spectrum of diet by saying that this makes the most sense to those of us who are Westerners. If you live in the high Peruvian Andes in a indigenous culture, this doesn't make any sense for you because you've already been fused with your environment and you've eaten foods that are local to you. You were born of a mother who also ate foods right from that environment. The way that you eat and the way you live and the significance of your culture are all deeply intertwined over many hundreds or thousands of years. So you haven't dropped out of that and gone into something like processed foods. Okay, so without getting into original sin and all that kind of stuff, which I don't take this conversation that way, but once you have started to differentiate yourself from the environment, meaning you're not an indigenous culture anymore, but you've decided to take on a scientific perspective and create things like industrialized agriculture and have dissociated from the environment and created things like processed foods, then you start to get health challenges that require you to somehow find a way, I wouldn't want to say a way back, but a way forward into a healthier diet and a body and a diet that is appropriate for the times that we live in. Okay, so the spectrum of diet is something I started to work on 4 or 5 years ago. It was just kind of it was just this little germ in my mind for a while. John Rose, who taught me about juice feasting, he and I were having a conversation one day. He's been a long time raw vegan. And I was saying, John, there's got to be a way that we can let people know what they need to do to heal certain health challenges, because some of them really require that you do a raw vegan diet or a juice feast or a water fast. And some, if you just went vegetarian, you'd probably heal it. It's like there's got to be a way of kind of lining all of that up. And it was a couple of years later, I was in Arizona. I was working on There's a Cure for Diabetes with Dr. Cousins. And I'm standing in the shower, which is where a lot of great ideas come in. And I saw, and I've been reading Ken Wilber, and this map came into my mind. It's like, oh, it's a move. It's a move from junk food into fast food into a standard American diet. I'll qualify all these in a minute. From junk food to fast food to standard American into whole foods, and then into vegetarian and vegan and raw vegan and what I will now call finally an integrated diet. And we'll qualify that in a little bit. Now, what are we looking at with the spectrum of diet? I mean, what have I done here by lining up these kind of deep features of nutrition, as I call them? We're moving from, remember that term holons that I said, meaning something that is a whole in and of itself that's also part of something larger, which may have smaller parts that make it up. You're moving from really low level, not very deep holons, to really high level, very deep, highly organized holons with a lot of capacity. That's the basic move you're making up the spectrum of diet. Junk food, like a Jolly Rancher. It doesn't have the depth that a bottle of spirulina does or a kale salad. Not even close. Not even close. There's not the cultural significance. There's not the ecological benefits involved. There's not the health benefits involved. In and of itself, it just doesn't have the nutritional depth that a leaf of kale does. So if we start to look at the diets that we've eaten in the past, you can kind of find their center of gravity. This is a really important term, your center of gravity. This term, center of gravity, is going to get us out of fundamentalist thinking about any type of dietary approach. One center of gravity or particular dietary approaches line up somewhere on the spectrum of diet. Okay, so we can identify particular nutritional approaches or advocates whose center of gravity will pretty much fall on vegetarian, okay, or vegan, or raw vegan, okay, or some people just fall right into whole foods, you know, really squarely like that. And so you start to tell some things about a dietary advocate just based on that. But your center of gravity moves up through this. Now, for a lot of us, this is the story of our lives if we've grown up in Western society. I'll take myself as an example. I was born, I was adopted at birth. My mom couldn't breastfeed me, and so I drank Similac for the first couple of years of my life, and then I moved into Gerber baby food. That's pretty much a move from junk food, which I definitely consider Similac to be junk food, into more processed food or standard American. And I ate standard American all growing up. Okay. Now, when you're at a particular stage or when your center of gravity is at a particular place on the spectrum of diet, you don't necessarily fully realize where you're at. You can't see it as well as you can see it when you move beyond it. So, Kevin, what did you eat growing up?
Pretty much standard American, yeah.
Were you aware of a raw vegan diet at that point?
Absolutely not.
Were you aware of a vegetarian diet?
Might have heard of it from a friend.
Maybe. But couldn't really feel into like what that was, you know, or a vegan diet.
No idea.
So what ends up happening is we end up jumping a stage at some point. You say, oh my gosh, you know what? This thing has outlived its usefulness for me for one reason or another. And so you jump a stage. So for a lot of us, we say, wow, I've been eating processed food my whole life, and it's created all these health challenges for me, and I've got to do something different. And so people will move into a whole foods diet or some variation on that. You know, they might move into vegetarian or vegan. But it's more plant-based, and it's getting less processed. And you stay there for a while. For me, I definitely moved into whole foods and then very quickly into a vegetarian diet. And I stayed there for many years. And at some point, start to realize, oh, you know what? Oh, gosh, the dairy that I'm eating is from cows, and those cows aren't treated very well to create the dairy. I really should move into a vegan diet, for example. And then eventually you realize that the benefits that you've gotten from a vegan diet don't really cut it, or you're really excited about eating all fresh food, or you've still got some health challenges that have been hanging around, and you move into a raw vegan diet. It happens again. I will say in this talk today that a raw vegan diet has a limited time span on it for most people. Putting your center of gravity there, you might be able to do that. But center of gravity means that predominantly you eat from that part of the spectrum of diet. How many raw vegans do we know that think that cooking food is probably not the best thing for it? They think that. And yet they still eat some vegan cuisine or sometimes even some vegetarian cuisine. Okay. Center of gravity doesn't imply that you eat everything from that particular place, but that predominantly you're eating from there. And I think it's a much more healthy perspective or way of being with diet rather than fundamentally eating one particular way.
I just want to interrupt you here for a second. I think it's really important to mention that you know, center of gravity because it seems that a lot of people get confused and they believe that they need to fundamentally, you know, follow some of the advice that they're being given.
Right. Well, so when you jump a stage, let's say when you go vegetarian, we are talking about two different words, two very important words that we use in integral theory. Transformation, you've heard this word used a lot, transformation. I'm transforming. What does that mean exactly? We'll get to that in just a moment. And also the word translation. Okay, transformation is more of a vertical thing. You've jumped a stage. So the move from a whole foods into a vegetarian diet, or the difference between eating a vegetarian diet and a vegan diet, I consider these to be stages of development, nutritionally speaking. Now, when you jump a stage, you get to the next stage. It's kind of like moving up to another floor of a building. You get to the next floor, and you're like, well, what do we do here? Who are the people who work here? What kind of furniture do they have? What's the view from here? How do I move around this, you know, this office space, let's say? How do I work with the people here? That horizontal movement of just walking around the floor is what we'd call translation. And when you move from a vegetarian into a vegan diet, the most important thing to you right away is to stay fundamentally vegan. Like, I am not eating cheese. I am not eating any animal products. My Birkenstocks are out of here. My leather belt, my leather shoes, you know, whatever it is that was attached to animals, I am letting that go. That is the most important thing to me. It's not necessarily the most important thing to me that I eat the most healthy vegan diet, because I'm not even sure what that is yet. I just got to this floor. I've got to find some books. I've got to talk to some people. I need to go to some vegan potlucks, listen to some interviews. I've just got to figure this out. But right now, I've just got to stay vegan. That's translation. Now, as you work that floor or that level of development better, you start to get to know the people and the furniture and the ways of being at that particular level, that particular stage. And it's working well. You're getting really good at it. You translate better and better. You work with the people on that floor better. I'm kind of mixing metaphors here a little bit, but I think everybody gets what I'm saying. At some point, you start to hear about the floor above you. You're like, what's the work they do? You know, if you get on the elevator and go up another floor, what are they doing up there? How do they live? And you start to see that the work you're doing on the floor that you've got is, it's going pretty well, but there are some places where you're like, you know what? We need some different furniture in here. I need something more. This isn't quite working for me anymore. I'd like to make more money or whatever it is. And so you get on the elevator and you go up another floor and boom, okay, now you've got a whole different set of realities. And that floor may be based on, in fact, in a developmental hierarchy, it will be based on the truths, the best truths of previous levels, but it will also transcend the abilities of the previous level. So most of us in the raw vegan movement would argue that a raw vegan diet will include the benefits that you got from vegetarian and vegan, but it'll drop off some of the negative aspects, and it will have some abilities, or you'll recognize some benefits at a raw vegan level that you didn't quite recognize at a vegan level of eating. Okay, a lot of us feel that way moving from vegan into raw vegan, for example. I'm going to suggest, and we'll get to it a little bit later, that even to move from raw vegan into an integrated diet, you even get, there's some greater capacities that come in. Transformation, moving up a stage, and then translating on that stage. Now, what some people end up doing, and why you see a lot of fundamentalism in any particular nutritional perspective, is that people get to a particular floor, and they decide to stay there. And even when some truth comes in and they're like, and people say, well, this is not what the research shows, they either won't listen to it or they'll just bury it, you know, somehow. And so the fundamentalism goes from being really healthy at the beginning, which is I've got to stay fundamentally vegan. It's really important for me to heal this inflammatory issue that I've got or to lose some weight or whatever it is. It goes from being healthy to starting to look pathological. Okay, we get stuck. Now, of course, anybody is welcome to stop at any floor that they want to. But there are some downsides to stopping your growth and development, I think, through the spectrum of diet. And that includes raw vegan. Now, that doesn't mean that you won't continue to eat raw vegan foods. I do think there's something beyond it. But I want to wait on that just a little bit, because I want to qualify the spectrum of diet in just a couple of other ways, to give everybody a feel of why I've developed this and why I think it's important and why it can kind of tell the story of our nutritional lives for a lot of us. And also how it can give us perspective on what the westernized world is ready for in terms of its next nutritional leap, which in my opinion is not to raw vegan or even vegan. There are some interior qualities that are developed. This is a kind of a healing approach to looking at the spectrum of diet, a healing for your own self, for your perspective that you've had on lower aspects of the spectrum of diet. There's something that you get at every stage of development. Now, we're talking about nutritional development here, but you could look at other lines of development, such as cognitive development or stages of moral development, which we talked about earlier, just this move from being egocentric into being more sociocentric, into more world-centric, into more cosmocentric, and taking on the care and concern of all beings. That's a moral developmental stages process. Okay? There's also psychosexual development. There's aesthetic development. Some people, you walk into their apartment and they don't know anything about art or being able to design their apartment. And other people are just brilliant at it. They've really worked at art for a long time. There's a stages developmental process there. So as you move up through stages of development, you will get certain benefits at each stage. You get certain benefits from every stage of the spectrum of diet. Well, people ask me, well, what benefit do you get from junk food? And there couldn't be any benefit that you get from eating junk food whatsoever. That's a long time, and I was thinking, maybe that's right. Maybe you just don't get anything out of junk food. And then I realized I started to tap into my eating of junk food because I used to pour sugar into my Coca-Cola, and I ate my share of gummy bears. Oh, yeah, straight sugar into your Coca-Cola. That's, I don't think it gets much worse than that unless you add, like, narcotics. That was pretty bad. So what do you get out of junk food? I mean, I racked my brain on this for a long time, and I put myself in the place of eating, like, Jolly Ranchers and gummy bears and Snickers bars and all that other stuff, and I thought, you know what? I really enjoyed those foods while I was eating them. You know, I got the pure enjoyment of food. I mean, sure, I was creating suffering for my body as well, but in the moment, I really enjoyed eating those things. That's why I went for them. I'd save up my grass, you know, my lawn mowing money to go out and buy more of that stuff. I really enjoyed it. Now, the pure enjoyment of food is something we want to take with us all the way up through the spectrum of diet. If you get to a particular level on the spectrum of diet and you don't enjoy it, something's not right. You've left something out. So we take that with us as we move into, you know, the fast food that we've eaten during our lives. What do we get out of fast food? It's efficient. You can just go to the drive-up window or walk in, and I mean, in like 2 minutes, I mean, they've got food for you. Efficiency. If you want to take forever to make your food, you want to linger for hours in the kitchen, go for it. But for me, I feel like that was a positive thing that I learned from our industrialization of food, is that a person can acquire it quickly. And I'd like to have the option of being able to acquire my food relatively efficiently so that I can get on to what the food and my good health is in service to in my life, what it is I'm really here to do, which is much more than to sit down and eat or make something in the kitchen. For me. So efficiency, we get it out of fast food. So we get into standard American. My feeling about that is we start to get food from the grocery store. It's not all that great, but we get it from the grocery store and we bring it home and we tend to eat with other people more. It moves out of being purely egocentric into more sociocentric. Okay? Start to see some moral developmental stages here. So you get communion out of a standard American diet. You're eating with people at church. You're eating with your family at home. You know, you're going out with your friends to eat standard American food at some kind of a restaurant. And communion is really important. You know, if you're eating a diet that alienates you from everybody else, there's something you're missing. Something's missing from the cosmos. So communion, we take that with us the rest of the way. As you get into whole foods, you move out of processed foods and you get into nutrition. Oh, okay, I'm really looking for nutritional quality here in my food. Not just does it taste good, not just do I enjoy eating it with other people or that I can get it quickly, but what's the nutritional depth of my food? That's much more important to me at this point. You want to take that with you the rest of the way. Now, some people will pathologically develop and they'll drop some of these things off. Dropping off the perspective on nutrition happens for people who go vegetarian or vegan. There's a lot of junk food vegetarians and vegans out there, and they've forgotten this important aspect of the spectrum of diet. They don't know anything about nutrition. They haven't looked into it. It's not their concern. Their main concern, which is not to be dismissed, it's very important, is kindness to animals. So as you move from whole foods into vegetarian, you start to take on the care and concern of other beings. Now we're moving from not just egocentric and sociocentric, but more world-centric and more cosmocentric. I'm expanding my care and concern out to other beings and to the planet itself. I care about the ecology, and I want to start eating in a way that's more in balance with what I know about our current ecological condition. So vegetarian, you get with it kindness. I want to be kind to animals. But the move from vegetarian into vegan, you realize, well, I'm not being entirely kind to animals by eating a vegetarian diet. I still know that after being milked for a number of years, that cow goes off to the slaughter, and I really don't like that. And so I want to live more compassionately. So I qualify compassion as something that has a little bit more depth than kindness does. It's a little bit more embodied than just a good intention. It really goes all the way into full-on love and concern for beings. So we get compassion from vegan. Now, this is an interior. These are all interior qualities that we're developing. From compassion, we move into raw, live, plant-based. Now we start to look at transformation. I really feel that when it comes to healing most of the major health challenges that we have derived from eating an industrialized diet in the West, that a shift up into raw, live, plant-based nutrition is the best thing that we can do to heal a lot of our health challenges. Now, again, like any floor, any stage of development, it will outlive its usefulness, so we'll talk about that in a little bit. But it's an amazing healing diet, and I think the mistake that we've made in the raw vegan community is not differentiating between what will help us to heal and serve us pretty well, being fundamentalist about it and really just living on that floor, what will serve us well in that way as a healing diet versus what will serve us well as a maintenance diet over the long term. And I know there's a lot of debate out there about that, so we can talk about it today. But there's a big emphasis on transformation for people who are raw vegan. They start to integrate yoga. They move out of their religious perspective into more of a spiritual perspective. They're studying the environment and our diet's impact on economics and how we can transform the planet. You know, we'll get back to that because there's a big raw vegan narrative or a vegan narrative that we're going to talk about. And there's some real great aspects of that, and there's some things that don't work so well. But the energetic or the emotional space or the interior development that you're seeing at Raw Live Vegan is based on transformation. Finally, you get to what I call an integrated diet. And an integrated diet, or being integral, definitely is coming out of the work of Ken Wilber and his definition of integral. Integral thinking, or an integral way of being, is not looking back down through your past development as a human being and saying, oh, God, what an idiot I was. You know, or people who are doing what I used to do, oh, yeah, I look at them now and I'm like, God, you guys just don't know anything. You look back down through all of your developmental stages. So for me, I'm looking all the way back to my parents giving me Similac and me eating Jolly Ranchers and gummy bears. And I say, you know what? It was all valid. It all had purpose. It was all levels of truth. And I honor those levels of truth and I incorporate them into my being the best way that I can. And I see that other people are also on that path of interior development and working with nutrition and taking on larger circles of care and concern as they move up through the spectrum of diet. And so it's not levels of deception. It's not like, oh, well, people who eat soy are just completely deceived and they're idiots. Well, not if they're vegetarian and they've been drinking homogenized, pasteurized cow milk their whole life. They're not deceived at all. They're doing something amazing, which is getting off of that stuff. So it's not levels of deception, but it's levels of truth all the way up. And so you'll see people who will hold these various levels of the spectrum of diet and hold that level of truth. And so many of us, I mean, everybody you interviewed in the Great Health Debate holds their truth so well. So how can we create an integral vision for nutrition, or what I call a, I'll throw out another kind of big term here, a stages catechism. Catechism is a word that comes from the Christian tradition, kind of looking at stages of faith. But how can we create a nutritional stages catechism that helps people understand this developmental process all the way through and honor every single dietary advocate for where they're doing well and acknowledge where they're a little bit partial and where there's still some development to occur? Healthy expressions all the way up through the spectrum of diet. And I mean, as a raw vegan who worked with Dr. Cousins, I'm saying there is at that level a healthy expression of standard American. There's even a healthy expression of fast food if you really want to look deeply into it. Is it as healthy as Whole Foods? Is it as healthy as vegetarian? No. But that's the way development occurs. It's healthier levels all the way through with greater capacities. Is that making sense, Kevin?
It is. I want to bring it down a little bit more basic, as in how does this all apply to the person who's listening? So you know, we've broken down all the different aspects of integral thought. We've broken down the different spectrum of diet. Now, how does it apply to the basic question of what, and I'm going to add this, the heck do I eat?
Yeah, right. So if you take this, the spectrum of diet and you look at the different levels, look at those qualities in yourself. Have I developed compassion, or have I developed kindness yet? Kindness and then compassion. Have I done that? Do I know how to eat a vegetarian or a vegan cuisine? Have I looked at the people who advocate at that particular level? Do I know that? Also, it would take a little bit too much time today, but if you look at the spectrum of diet online, I kind of put various health challenges that we have and how far up the spectrum of diet you might need to go to help heal something. So for example, heart disease, since it kills so many people, Dr. Caldwell-Bieselstein has shown to my satisfaction that if you eat a vegan diet without adding too much oil, you can heal heart disease if you have it. Okay? So that can give you some, that kind of thing can give you some perspective on how far up the spectrum of diet you need to go to take care of yourself, or where on the spectrum of diet you might fall given your own personal development, right? How much you know about nutrition. If you don't know how to, James Sheridan of Health Force Nutritionals, he and I had this conversation about people just making the jump from a standard American diet right into raw vegan. The concern for us, which is very valid, and I see it happen with people that I juice feast fairly often, is that they make this jump right into raw vegan, and then when they fall back, so to speak, when they move into earlier habits or ways of being, they don't drop back into a healthy vegan diet or a vegetarian diet. They drop all the way back to standard American or junk food. So I think that there is a really important process of landing on some of these and eating that way for a while and then moving up the spectrum of diet. Now, that being said, there are some reasons, such as a really tenacious health challenge, to go ahead and shift very strongly into a vegan or a raw vegan diet or into a cleanse. And so you have to take those things into account, and that will determine where you land. I've got some other writing on that, some other things to say about it a little bit later in our conversation. Things that play into how you determine what it is that's best for you to eat, because there is no monolithic nutritional imperative, okay? But a lot of us at particular levels along the spectrum of diet will tell you that there is, and there's not. It's based on a whole lot of different circumstances that come in, and you can base those circumstances, you can integrate those circumstances based on different levels of the spectrum of diet. So for, I'll give you one example, and then we'll get back to this. Ayurveda that comes out of India. You can get an Ayurvedic perspective on a standard American, whole foods, vegetarian, vegan, or raw vegan diet. Dr. Cousins has given a really good understanding of Ayurveda from a raw vegan perspective. Okay. So if you want to use that particular way of thinking about nutrition, you can apply it all the way up and down the spectrum of diet. Well, not in the junk food particularly, but certainly from standard American on. So I think that kind of thing helps. But can we come back to that question?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. I just wanted to you know, pepper that in there, just so yes. Everyone out there who's listening now just knows we're getting to it, we're moving towards it. It just requires a lot of background, really. I mean,
right.
And I like the background that you're giving, because it makes more and more sense to me the more times I hear it. So for those of you who are listening who might not be getting some of this, listen to this again.